to season 4 of the Inbalance podcast. My name is Jim Simon, and I'm joined by co-host Kelsey Solberg.
Hello. Hi.
Inbalance animates Gonzaga University's CREATE model for sustainability through interviews and conversations with students, staff, faculty, and community members, all practicing sustainability on campus and in our region. Today, we are joined by Drs. Heather Crandall and Carolyn Cunningham, co-authors of the book Climate Girl Effect, Fridays, Flint, and Fire. We just had a really great conversation with them, and we are excited to share it with you.
Such a great conversation.
Such a great conversation.
I was thinking during it, I got chills a lot, and I know that this room is cold. We did talk about that when we started, but I think it was actually because of the conversation. Just so much of what they were pointing out with through their research, like the stories that they were telling about these young women and the power that they have. And it's pretty remarkable.
It is. It's inspiring. It's exciting. I think I'm excited to one day read their book and maybe it'll become one of my favorites, as we will talk about later. I'm just kind of looking at my notes, trying to pick out what sticks out. But I think functivism, or having fun and mixing it with activism, I think when we talked about that, I was reflecting on how old I feel, because I remember making paper mache things for protests and banners, and that was fun. And I feel like maybe activism has moved away from that, and maybe this is moving back towards it, but in a different way, like in doing things together in community. I don't know, maybe that has nothing to do with what we talked about, but that's what came up for me.
Yeah. Well, and I think you touched on that, like maybe this is fun. It's fun to make an app, or it's fun to do, you know, and it just fun is looking maybe a little bit different.
Yes. I think that is very true.
Yeah. I think one of the themes that came up for me, and I mentioned this during it, but is this, I think what seems unique about, because this is kind of a niche group to focus on, right? To focus on young women in the movement, and that they had so much to pull from, like so much research and so many case studies. And it had me wondering, you know, what is so unique about young women in this space? And I think even just youthfulness in general in this, in climate activism, feels so important. And that was something that I was probably aware of, but I think this really highlighted it, like having that, the playfulness, the fun, like you mentioned, but also this ability to really have the stakes seem higher and yet lower at the same time. Like there's a sense of freedom that they can kind of bring to it. And that's something I think that it's just really necessary. And they talked a lot about that. And I don't know, just kind of added another layer for me to the movement, and a little bit of hope in there too, which is never a bad thing.
Yeah, definitely helpful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, give it a listen.
Give it a listen.
Enjoy. Welcome. Great to have you here today. We're shaking off the rust a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. Get back into it.
Who are you? Who's sitting across from us between the computers and the puzzles?
Separated by a puzzle.
I'm Heather Crandall. I'm the Chair of Communication Studies here at Gonzaga, and that's who I am. I'm also a faculty person.
And I am Carolyn Cunningham. I'm the Chair of Communication and Leadership Studies. You got two chairs here.
Two chairs.
And I'm one of the co-authors of the book, The Climate Girl Effect. So thanks for having us.
Two chairs and a chair. Well, two chairs.
Yes.
How's your fall been so far?
Crazy.
Crazy.
I feel like things are so busy. More than they have been.
Ever before.
Huh. Like, I don't know. I feel like there's a lot to do on my to-do list. Mm. And that's all right. Busy people are happier people, but it feels really busy.
Yeah.
So,
I'm going to have to remind myself of that. Busier people are happier. Yeah. Sometimes I'm not convinced.
Yeah.
And I am pretty busy, but lots of soccer because I have two kids who are both in club soccer. So okay. There's a lot of that all the time. And my son just asked a girl to homecoming today. Oh. So there's that.
Did it work out?
Yeah, did you say yes?
I don't know.
If Carol has to check her phone during this one. Oh, that's great. We're kind of interested too, I mean, hearing, you know, who you are, but kind of more about your story, each of you, kind of what's brought you here and to this work specifically.
Okay, well, so when I was in grad school, it was down at Washington State University, and I'm a first-gen college student, and so I knew that I loved learning, but I wasn't quite sure what higher education was all about, but I kept liking it, and I kept going. And so I was in the communication studies program and learned about media studies and communication studies and rhetorical studies and American studies, and I loved it. And for my dissertation, I studied the narratives of working poor in crime drama. So I got my dissertation, I worked at Whitworth for a little while, and then I got a job here at Gonzaga, which I love, and this is where I met this person.
And I have a little bit of a different story. I've always been interested in movies and media, and so I had a job at a movie theater, worked my way through college, and I was like, oh, you know what I want to do? I want to make documentaries. So the place to do that is Austin, Texas. So I moved after I graduated from college to Austin, got a job with the South by Southwest Film Festival, doing grunt work, logistical work, and dipped my toe in the documentary world there, in the film community. But then I realized, like, I'm not that talented, and so I decided that I wanted to get my master's degree in media studies because I felt like, you know, that would be maybe where I could find a home or find a place. And all of my research has, since graduate school, has been about girls and technology and access. So I'm really interested in how girls can get more access to technology and what the barriers are to them participating. So a lot of my work's about girls in STEM, and not surprising, it's a communication problem because girls feel like the way that STEM fields are presented to them are ways that they can't relate to or don't want to participate in. So research shows that they're equally as competent. It's not that girls are bad at math, for example, but they don't see why they would, right? Like, why would I do that? Why would I want to be like a nerdy computer science person? So that's been really fun, and that's the thread in a lot of my research. One of my first book was on girls in video games and how girls participate in video games, not only how they design video games, but how they interact with video games differently than boys. And so that was really fun. And that just got us talking about, you know, we've done a lot of, Heather and I do a lot of work together, and it's always really fun.
Sorry, I want to go back. What about this piece? Like, and then your second book was about impression management online.
Yes. Then I had another book. Impression management online. Just because, you know, technology is constantly changing. But some things remain the same. And so I'm always just interested in how to use the medium of technology for communication, and so fascinated why people do that and how they do that. So yes, I had that book, but one of my recent projects is about Twitch and how people are using Twitch and how video game streamers are using Twitch for social change and trying to get social messages out through that. So disparate kind of things, but always that's the common thread for me. And social justice, social change. Yeah.
Gotcha. Is Twitch the platform where people record themselves playing games?
Yeah, okay. And they live stream it. Yeah.
Okay.
They live stream it.
I'm glad you asked that.
Yes, Twitch, they live stream, and there's all kinds of crazy stuff related to social change on there. In fact, in our book, we're finding that climate scientists are actually finding, you know, playing video games online to get their message out to kids about climate change. Super interesting, because you want to meet people where they're at. And so if that's where people are doing this, you know, that's where you have a captive audience of kids, you can play Minecraft with them and talk to them about climate science.
Okay.
So interesting.
I
I think I'm asking for selfish reasons because my son has, I think, watched more videos of people playing Minecraft than actually playing it.
That is my daughter does that too. Okay. Preston. Preston. Does she watch Preston?
I don't know. It's kind of a...
He's kind of a big YouTuber.
Younger kid.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, he's probably in his 20s based on the voice.
Yeah.
Huh. But it's fascinating.
Like, why would you watch?
Why would you watch when you play?
He only got it on his iPad in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But he'd been watching for like weeks before that and hadn't really been like, I want this. He's like content with watching the videos.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's bizarre.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because you learn a lot about the person playing the video games, like what they're wearing, what they're buying, what they're eating, because they're having a conversation when they're videotaping themselves. Yeah.
Interesting.
It's weird. And tons, huge audiences, right? Like you're saying. Like,
yeah.
It's a brave new world. Brave new world.
Well, that's not why we're here. not Minecraft. Could you two tell us a little bit about the book that you worked on together, Climate Girl Effects, Fridays, Flint and Fire?
Yes.
Yeah, we can tell you.
You can.
How long is the show?
Days.
Yeah.
We can make it as long as it takes this to puzzle. Do this puzzle in front of us.
So it's a book about following different climate girl activists. There are, what, 8 chapters?
Mm-hmm.
We start with Greta Thunberg, and she's the really iconic climate girl activist, and she's really interesting. They're all really interesting, so I'm not going to say that for every time I say something. But then we looked at Flint, Michigan, and the water crisis there, and specifically Little Miss Flint and her activism. And then we go into there's a chapter on Indigenous climate girl activists, and there's a chapter on girls climate activists who start their own nonprofit organizations. To, you know, have some lasting effect and organize themselves, you know, across the globe. And then we have a chapter on, we call it techno girls. Is that what we call it?
Techno feminism.
Techno feminism.
Yeah.
And then we have one on lawyer up, girls who sue governments. And we end with, what's it all mean and what can we do? So that's your overview.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, and so we just started saying, you know, of course, with Greta Thunberg, it was like, what is happening with youth in the climate movement, but specifically girls? What's drawing them to be passionate about participating in the movement and emerging as leaders, mm-hmm. right? Because one of the things we found in our book is they face incredible harassment and bullying from not only adult politicians, like with Greta Thunberg, right? You know, Trump is coming after a teenage girl. But also we've talked to several other girl activists that say, we're bullied from within the movement itself because of our gender and our generation. Victims of sexism, not taken seriously. And so despite all of that, they continue to persist, right? They don't give up. They're still around. They're still doing their activism. And one of the things we found is they're able to find their own niche within the climate justice movement. So with Greta, it's about... being coalitional, right? She shows up to places where she needs to shine a spotlight on Indigenous rights or and media follow her and she frames it through her own social media, right? Yeah. So it's not only that we use the term spectacular, these girls become media spectacles, but they're also using it to their advantage because they're framing the message the way they want to through their use of digital media, social media.
Yeah.
Video game design is one chapter. So that was really what started the project. And then we realized these climate girls are everywhere. So like Heather was just saying, they're starting nonprofits. They're working with the UN, you know, deciding where they're going to put their charitable contributions, right?
Wow.
At age. Yeah. Creating pipelines of youth leaders globally. You know, the girls who are suing governments, successful in some places, but not successful in other places. But we were able to interview some of them, and they just talked about just the voice and the power that they're able to get through this activism. And ultimately, it gives them hope, because it's overwhelming. I think it's overwhelming for these girls who feel like, why aren't adults acting? Like, clearly... Clearly, we know the solutions, right? Like, we know what we need to do. It's been documented, but nobody's taking action.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're angry, but they're also hopeful. So that was, I think, what inspired us about their stories and telling
mm-hmm.
their stories.
Yeah. Yeah. The other piece that this is reminding me of is a lot of them start with personal experience that they have. So,
mm-hmm.
like, maybe somebody is studying, really excited about a school project where she's studying a marine life animal,
mm-hmm.
and then through her research finds out that it's going to be extinct.
Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, so these girls are getting a firsthand education, then they're getting commitment, then they're organizing themselves through social media to gain more supporters who are like-minded about what needs to get done. And then they face people who are like, oh, look at you. You have all that knowledge. And it's sort of a condescending pat on the head, right? It's like, how frustrating that must be for them to be knowledgeable about science, understand the climate
mm-hmm.
emergency that's happening, and then have people who are in positions of power and authority just like not take them seriously and dismiss them and dismiss them publicly. And it's just so frustrating, because you get that, okay, boomer, like, you get this antagonism between the generations,
mm-hmm.
but that's not going to do the job, right? You need the holding hands, you need the alliances, you need everyone working together. And so also in this process, this reminds me that there are generations of activists who get it, and they're like, we are with you. And so there's this group of grannies in a protest in Seattle called Shell No, I guess. It's like Hell No, except for Shell, you know, Shell Boys.
Oh.
So they get
okay.
together with the young climate activists, and they strategize. Like, we're going to do this direct action. We're going to do this thing because we're grannies, and we will be a great diversion, and you do this other thing. So there are little tiny sparkly pockets of progress and alliances,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
we just need more. We need way more.
Yeah, but they do feel like they need to take it, take a lot of it into their own hands. And so, you know, one of the people we talked to, she basically develops a pipeline of youth leaders. They go out and they do, you know, beach cleanups, and they do, you know, regrowth projects and these kinds of things. And she's just like, we need to do this for ourselves to save, you know, our place
mm-hmm.
where we live, you know? So a lot, you know, I think we're beginning to see the impact of climate change in the U.S. in a more desperate way, but that there are people who are all over the world who
they're on the front lines,
yes.
right? They're on
yes.
the front lines.
Yeah,
for
lost
sure.
their
so,
home,
mm-hmm.
you know, just, and so it's just, I think the girls from the Global South that we studied really got it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they understood it, and they understand the importance of it. And what was cool is someone like Greta Thunberg feels like she wants to be an ally. She doesn't want to speak for them, but she wants to shine a light on what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was something, I think, with the gender piece, that was very much like a horizontal form of leadership as opposed to hierarchical.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was kind of neat that these girls were creating those structures among themselves. Like,
yeah.
they basically are like, we're not going to push you under the bus. We're not put, you know, we're not trying to be in the spotlight. In
yeah.
fact, there's that case with Greta of India.
Right, right, right.
Mm-hmm.
It's Rashi Deva. I think it's, no, it's Risha Dhabi. Oh, I
well, if you read the book,
yeah.
Quick play.
But she was involved, she somehow became a symbol of the farming situation in India, and the news media started calling her the Greta of India. And so there was this whole, like, I'm this person, I am not a Greta. Like, we're not cloning Gretas all over the world. Like, so there's just been this. But as you look at these climate girl activists, they're like, yeah, absolutely. Like, let's, well, the other piece was Nakata from, they've had to do a lot of fighting with media representation and they're, you know, 15, right? Like, like, I don't know. They're really impressive the way that they're so savvy and so coalitional and so intersectional. It's really heartening and non-hierarchical, and they just seem to have a good thing going.
And that gets to the spectacular piece, because media representation of them is very much like, wow, look at this teenage girl. How could she participate in a protest and go to school and actually get her homework done on time and be a straight A student? What is she wearing? What is she, you know,
what
so
is she eating for breakfast? Like,
stuff it doesn't matter. Yeah, so it becomes that burden for them, but they seem to just not stop what they're doing because of it. They continue to kind of go on, and then some of them, you know, one of the things that we saw was how much they become influencers. So this was kind of a tricky piece for us, where a lot of they're supporting different causes and different, commodity activism, like companies that are trying to be more green or this. So and they get to be spokespeople and get free shoes. So that was a piece that we had to struggle with, because we didn't want to judge them for that, especially if they're putting the money that they're making into the community or supporting their causes. But it was a really interesting thing that a lot of these girls are now working for, you know, models for Abercrombie & Fitch. And so that was kind of an interesting dynamic. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out as they age and as they, that's the question, right? Like, will other climate girls emerge in the movement? Will it look really different? Will these girls stay involved? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we were thinking about that as kind of a first generation, at least since 2015, for this movement that's much more about conservation and trying to reel in this project of extraction industries and, you know, the direction we're going. We're trying to pull back, which is really hard for a lot of people to change. And I can't remember what I was going to say.
Okay. How do they process all of that they're doing? It feels like when I was 15, I was not suing governments. How do they process that? And also, how do they still be kids?
Well, and they, what's interesting is that's what they say. We don't want to be doing this. We want to be kids. You know, that's a rhetorical strategy that they're using. And it works really well, because I think it does pull on people's heartstrings. But I think there's a part of it that's true. One of the girls that's in one of the lawsuits that we talked with, she's like, you know, I just want adults to be real with me. You know, we want them to show vulnerability, as opposed to like, everything's fine, don't worry about it. Like, oh, wildfires over here. Well, you know, it might or might not affect you, you know. So I think they're looking into the future in a way that adults are not necessarily helping them navigate. And so I think that is going to be really important moving forward, in terms of adults really partnering with kids to help them understand the emotional and, you know, actual trauma that they're going to be facing moving forward. We can't predict what that looks like, but our sense from these girls was like, we want you to walk alongside us. We want you
to hear us and know that what we have to say is educated and knowledgeable, and you're treating us like we're dumb and like we're dismissing us and
angry and emotional,
and that's very alienating, right? And so they're like, that person Carolyn was talking about, like, okay, I know that that's not right, and you're pretending like it's right, and so I'm done with you adults. Like, I am just gonna, it makes them much closer to their own friend group and their own, you know, collectives. I'm also thinking about those girls who wrote that book, the sisters.
That's the other thing they do. They not only become spokespeople for corporations or companies,
They are a corporation.
But they also do things like create their own media. So some of them have podcasts. There's these girls who have, they have a book. They created a nonprofit. It's under a nonprofit chapter. And they have a book. I forget the name of the book right now. But it's, How to Be Plastic. It's plastic smart or something like that.
Clever.
Plastic clever. Yeah. Plastic clever. So the idea, and they're from England, so of course clever is, the word. So the idea was like, let's, their whole nonprofit is educating kids on trying to get them to not use as much plastic and then to recycle different plastics and pick up trash. They have one campaign as part of their nonprofit that they say pick up the trash and then mail it back to the companies. And they tell you how to do that and how to find what the company is. And then they give you the template of a letter that says like, please, can you fix this? They wrote a book that kind of, chronicles what their perspective is. And it's nice because they're speaking to kids and trying to speak the language of kids, where I think sometimes adults really miss that. And what they think is important to kids is not what kids themselves probably would find important.
And along with that, one of the through lines we found in a lot of their activism not only begins with personal experience, but also they pen a letter. Like, that is, like, sure, they get on social media and they connect and all those things, but they also are writing letters. And it's like one of the early environmental groups was a girl who wrote a letter to the president, and then it was on a billboard in a town. And so it kind of took off from that. And of course, Little Miss Flint wrote a letter to President Obama and about the crisis. And in the indigenous chapter during the Standing Rock protests, there were some letters that were written, and then a marathon run across the country to deliver it to. So it's just so interesting because we tend to think, the new media technologies. You also have an offline old activist strategies, and letters really played a role. I mean, Greta started with a letter. Her first protest was, why would I go to school?
She was handing out the letter to the Swedish parliament when they were coming to work, and it said,
you want me to go to school? You need to do something so I can grow up and live on a planet. Future. And so that was kind of a fun.
Yes,
the letter. Yes,
it lives.
Still,
Carolyn, you kind of touched on this, but one of the quotes that really stood out to me from your book was talking about climate girl activists, like other activists, need media to draw attention to their work, even though the media frame them as exceptional, emotional, and naive, often rendering them harmless and dismissible. Yet they continue to rise as leaders in the climate justice movement. And so, we've named a couple challenges that climate girls are obviously faced with, but I'm curious, like, what do you see as some of the advantages? Like, why is this group, young women, why are they standing out? Why are they able to really have like such a presence in this and such an impact?
That's a great question. I think Heather was saying, it really starts as this emotional space. But there's something to be said for the connection between, they all feel like a connection to the earth, and in this gendered way. And that doesn't mean that boys don't feel that way or men don't feel that way too, but that really just like fuels their spirit. Yeah. And even though they're seen as overly emotional, they kind of use some of that to their advantage to say, okay, I'm going to be angry. Of course I'm going to be angry. I'm going to stand in the streets. So I think there's a lot of that as well. And like I said, I think it's that leadership style that whether they're socialized, to be more caring and communal or not, that actually is real strength because they're not letting that divide them. And instead they're like, okay, well, and in fact, it brings them together because they're like, oh yeah, Greta, I can relate to her. And I don't want that to happen to me. Mm-hmm. And, there's that, but there is also just that vulnerability piece that, we especially found, I think, in the indigenous chapter with, the girls talked about, doing protests on the front lines and just the danger to them physically, being, in a rural place. And So there's a power in it, but it's like a double bind, I think, in a lot of ways.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good way to say that, because they're, you know, it's like, ooh, what is this? An activist, girl activist and climate and speaking so well. Let's get her on an international stage. Let's get her in front of world leaders. And then, you know, then it's sort of, she's sort of everywhere. But so they go to those places, and but they're carrying their message. And so it's connecting to a really broad audience of people who are also galvanizing those publics to come and join, which is good. And then we read that Vox article that was so great about just teen girls in culture and their power in the same time that they're, you know, oh, they're crazy fans, but also they change culture, right? So, and that's been a throughout for quite a while. And then just more recently, I can't remember the name of the activist. She's not one that we quoted her, but we didn't dwell on her. She has a piece in, I don't know if you know that book, All We Can Save.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's one of the early, one of the first or second people in that book. Anyway, I don't know if you heard it. She was just on the red carpet somewhere. Oh, you follow this?
No.
And so they invited her to this red carpet, and, you know, stereotypically it would be like, oh, it's great, this is so exciting, I get to be at this place on this red carpet and have my picture taken. But she brought, you know, a sign about the earth and the need to change everything, and then took it on the red carpet with her cute dress and her, like, and she was ushered off immediately. And so then, of course, on social media, it was like, she said, you invited an activist to your event. Like, what, I wouldn't stop being an activist. Yeah. Like, so, so they're very true. There's also, anyway, they're very true to what they believe so wholeheartedly in what they're doing, which they should, and we should, and it's very important. Code Red, right?
And it's like, because they're seen as harmless, they can get away with a lot more subversion, you know, like, exactly like
no
that.
Threat.
It's like, you see, they're not a threat. So, you know, they have that kind of cool position of like, okay, what are you going to do? Beat up a girl, you know? I mean, they do get beat up. But anyway, they're also seen as like, oh, they're not someone we should worry about too much. So.
I wonder with young people too, like the switch from when, or kind of where that line is generationally, that it's like being in the generation that's like, we have nothing to lose now.
Yeah.
Like, I just feel like there's been a shift where they're not quite as bogged down by kind of the way that we've been living, and they're not as tied up in some of maybe the comforts that some folks might have, but they've kind of hit this place where it's like, this is our only choice. It's our future, which is, we still have so much ahead of us. Or should still have so much ahead of us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just that feeling of like, you know, acting a little bit more aggressively or intentionally because they don't have as much to lose, it feels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They feel a sense of urgency.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
And that urgency allows them to act. But then there's also what did Jamie Margolin was talking about, climate defeatism.
Yeah.
There is that, you know, one of the activists was talking about, you know, this idea like, well, the world's going to end, so why bother participating?
Like apathy.
You know,
yeah,
so I think it has that double-edged sword, you know, and I can see that, you know, and
she does this piece like, it, even so, I want to, we're going to go down doing the right thing,
right,
and being, you know, collective and taking care of each other
and not giving up.
And she's like, what, 15, 16? Is she a little older than me? And I was like, oh, well, that's amazing.
It is.
So many people should be able to figure that out.
So impressive.
I know.
I feel like you touched on this a little bit, but what brought you two together? What inspired you to write the book?
Well, so we were thinking about this because we wrote, we edited a collection together about women and, or gender and communication and leadership, because we taught a class and we were like, you know what, we need this book and it's just not out there. And so as we were working on that, we decided we wanted to write our own book. This with our next project.
Mm.
We sat down like, well, what would it be like? What could we do? What do we both want to do? What are we both like? And we had been on a panel, I think that the philosophy department had asked us to be part of a panel on Laudato Si, on the Pope's encyclical. And so, of course, we read the Pope's encyclical. And Carolyn texted me and she was like, I'm at the gym and I'm reading the encyclical on the elliptical. And then we talked about, you know, whatever, all the things that we like talking about. But on that panel, she did the Laudato Si as a in Twitter, I think it was, the hashtag that the Laudato Si from the Pope. And and so we started with that. And I did sort of the rhetorical, like temporal rhetorics, like how do we think about time and what's the right moment for the right metaphor. Anyway, we started there. And then she did the Cataldo Project a couple summers ago, maybe 3 or 4 summers ago.
Yeah, the Cataldo Project is kind of a professional development opportunity for faculty to develop curriculum for their courses related to sustainability and these kinds of things. So I participated in it, and I was like, Heather, you gotta apply, you gotta do this.
So then I did the next summer. I was like, oh, this is good. So we were getting more and more educated on the importance of the climate emergency and the educational role that we have and how that could be a difference that we could make. And so that's kind of how it started. We sat down after we edited that other book and we're like, okay, you like talking about girls and this, I like talking about social change and activism. We both like talking about media. Mm-hmm. She liked talking about technology. So we just brainstormed into this, let's do it, climate activist girls.
Yeah. And we should point out we wrote the book during the pandemic. And so for most of it, we wrote the book over Zoom together.
Oh my God.
Because we couldn't see each other. So it was like, oh, okay. We're doing it soon. And we like persisted through that because we got the book contract during the pandemic. Mm. Yeah. So we got the book contract in June 2020. Yeah, and then we had to write it.
Yeah. So interesting during the pandemic because you started to see the changes that were happening because of that were environmental. And then of course, you know, the hardship on people who identify as female all over the world. Yeah. And so it's like it was all happening as it was happening. Yes. And writing and zooming about it.
So it sounds like there was kind of a, here are the pieces of the puzzle, to use this metaphor that we have sitting on the table, but here are the pieces and kind of fitting it together. What surprised you, I guess, was there anything that surprised you as you kind of were piecing these things together and realizing like, wow, this is all really connected. And as you started doing research, like what were some of the kind of surprises that came up?
I think how many girls are involved in this and how many different ways. Mm-hmm. So that to us was just really like, so each book, each chapter is a case study. And so, you know, we basically said, you know, here's girls who are, you know, designing video games and apps for climate, you know? And just, that was just like wild that was on the girls' radars or, you know, the nonprofits that we've mentioned, just like that's what they want to do. So I think we kind of landed on there's a role for everybody. And so it's such a big problem and there's so many different ways to do it. So whatever way girls can fit in, there's a role and they just carve it out for themselves. And I think that was really empowering because not everyone wants to go protest in the streets, right? And not everyone feels comfortable doing that.
Yeah.
But you know, could they do some recycling, you know? Can you go do a trash pickup? Yeah. So it kind of has that snowball effect of saying, okay, well, if I can participate in this, then I can go down this path. And I think that's really helpful because I think kids, you know, again, some of them said, you know, not everybody's going to be Greta Thunberg. Like, and that's overwhelming to have so much focus on her. I'm going to feel never good enough. Yeah. Right. So then just being able to say, oh, wow, look at all these different ways that they are doing it. I think we wanted to tell that story because, then I think it's more brings it to the ground and allows youth to figure out how to participate.
Like we were impressed going in and then we were really just blown away. Like, okay. So they decide they want a grassroots nonprofit and they create this organization and they get all of these people in involved, and they do it across the globe, and then they figure out, well, we're going to have to train the next generation. And so they design a bunch of like ways to make sure that they will have a legacy, and they're, I'm going to say 15 again, darn it. Like, yeah. They're like, yeah. Like the visionary piece and the, and then just like, okay, so they're like, we don't want to do it the way that we're told to do it probably by adults. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. Oh, you have an organization, who's in charge and who's next in charge and how we make decisions. And they're like, you know what? This is what we're going to do. We're going to do this non-hierarchical thing where anybody can make a decision, like they're like to read their mission statements and their kind of operating procedures. Anybody can make a decision for the organization as long as you follow these three or four values, which are just beautiful values. Like, yeah. Oh yeah, that seems like that's how the world should be. Smart. And then two or three people have to agree to that, and then you can act. But all you have to do is talk with each other, make sure you're all cool with that, and then do it. Like that's wouldn't it be wild if the institutions that you're involved in and worked like cool. that?
And it does seem very girl like in a lot of ways, or gendered, you know, like communal, and let's all get along, and you know,
you can work through it, and conflict is empowering instead of tearing us apart.
And the intersectional piece, I think, was interesting to us because they all, like, you know, that was one of the critiques from one of the reviewers. Like, it sounds really, like, binary and, you know, but we did try to say they self-identify as girls. So, you know, that's how we're representing them. But they do also identify as Indigenous or Latinx or queer or these kinds of things, too. So we did take that to heart because that is part of this generation too, is just really challenging all those categories. And so we wanted to be true to that, but we didn't see it in the way we thought we would. But maybe that's because of the things we were studying too, in terms of like their media materials, media representations, their social media. So it wasn't as clear.
Yeah, Gen Z radical, I think we were talking.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, because they're not interested in, they want to make change altogether.
Yeah.
And they're just not going to take any, and it's classic gendered young girls fight, right?
Yeah.
Like they're not interested in the fight.
Yeah.
They're interested in justice.
Yeah.
Environmental justice, social justice. It's cool. And then they're suing governments. Like that was like one more piece of that is that we were talking about the tech, the way that they're designing technologies. But then in our next chapter, which was Lawyer Up, it's like, oh, now they're participating in the technology of law. You know,
wow.
You know, like, right. Like that's right. Not a space where you're going to find young girls in there.
And their stories are becoming history because their testimonies and the way that they're doing it, they're leading that charge and leading that legacy of being written into law. And they know that. That's why they're doing it. So that's pretty cool, too.
And from a communication perspective, where I was talking about, like, stories are influential. And there's and that's another example of it. It's pretty cool. They just want to breathe clean air. I don't know.
Simple as that.
Simple. Not too much to ask.
Not too much to ask.
Have some drinking water.
We really want to know, what is functivism?
Okay, so functivism recognizes that their activism should be fun, right? There should be things that you do that's artistic. You get together with like-minded people, and you're making social change, and you can also make art, and you can also build community through that process. So it's just this term that's been used for that playfulness that and the fun that can happen through activism and the arts. And it has some other dimensions to it, too. Like, one of the things we saw is that there's a playfulness in the way that these climate activists respond to world leaders who are, you know, being the worst. and they joke around, like, about how ridiculous they are. And it's great.
Yeah, and it brings people in to follow them. And you know, for Greta, that was a good example. She becomes what we call the iconic protagonist. So she's like the main character and people are participating by following her social media, and it just gains that following because it's like, what's she gonna do next? You know?
And ha, ha, ha. Yeah, it's a little bit fun. And like, so Lomas Flint, she does a lot of really great like toy drives, and she does a lot of work in her community having fun with kids and trying to make sure that everyone remembers that they need that that clean water is important. And so so that's another example. It's not cool. It's not all down and dire all the time.
Yes.
Because eco-anxiety is a real thing.
Yeah.
And you can't always be focusing on what a bummer it is. So that's your functivism.
Yeah, I love that. I think the like playful, like the youthfulness and the playfulness that young people are able to bring, I do think is a spirit that's like needed, very necessary in that space. And perhaps that's one of those benefits of being a young person in this movement is having, it seems like there's like a level of freedom that they have of like, again, not being bogged down by some of these kind of norms and systems yet. And that allows them to sort of be freed up to have fun with it and be playfully engaging on Twitter with a world leader and not feel like that's so weighty some of us might.
Yeah. And like one of our activists is in refugee camps and doing art with the children and like, that's so cool.
But yeah, that was wild. Syrian refugee camps, they would go in and do sustainability workshops with the kids there, and they would plant trees in the refugee camps. And because she was very much like, I'm taking the UN to heart, leave no one behind. That is a sustainable development goal. I'm going there, we're not leaving you behind. That was really
And then she gets there and she's like, oh, we're in refugee camps, the electricity is not, the sun sets at 4 or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then now she's got a solar.
She like brings solar lamps to all of her kind of places. Yeah.
Yeah. So that they can read into the night and get their education. And there's another example of
creativity and innovation.
Yeah. And techno-eco feminism.
Mm.
Yes. Good.
Yeah. They fall.
Amazing.
Yeah. Heather coined the term.
Techno-eco-feminism.
Yes. So we started with this. We started with that concept of techno-feminism, which is really, how you use technology for feminist purposes. And so it's got kind of a two side to it. Mm-hmm. So it's really critical in saying, it's kind of what I was talking about earlier in terms of girls in STEM. Like, science is such a male domain, and so things like indigenous knowledge are not considered true, right?
Yeah.
So techno-feminism really challenges a lot of those ideas, but then also encourages using technology to better women's lives. And so I always use this example.
It's a good one. It's a really good example.
Just that well, which one?
You're like, are we doing the same one, man?
So the minivan, the first minivan, was designed by an all-women engineer team. And of course, it's got a lot of like critique for not being very, physically attractive, but it's very functional for moms and families. Right? And that innovation wouldn't have happened if we didn't have that kind of thinking or that diverse thinking. And so techno-eco-feminism is looking at how they're doing that in relation to the environment. Mm-hmm. So there were a lot of different examples of it. So Little Miss Flint, for example, designed her own water filter that she sends to places. I'm sure she sent them to Mississippi.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That have, limited access to clean water.
Yeah.
And so she saw that as a need, designed it, and promotes it, right? And then the solar lamps was another good one in terms of what we're seeing, that they're designing these technological solutions that they see fit the specific needs where they are. And it's very different, right, than what we would see otherwise. So they use their knowledge to be able to do that. And the chapter, we have one chapter just on the apps and video games that girls are designing related to the environment, and it was just cool because it's like, oh, okay, well, there was one, it was called Boxed In. So it's like, you use your app to locate where other people have boxes that you could use if you need to move or something like that, you know? But something so simple like that is sustainable, and it's what they saw as a solution.
Yeah.
You know, why should we be throwing all these boxes away when we can be recycling them and reusing them, repurposing them, and... It was just one small example. There, like, there was an app that tracks your shower water usage, you know, because kind of like Fitbit, right? You know, so just like that's going to motivate you for behavioral change, you know. So just the way that they were thinking about technological design in relationship to the environment was just really cool and hopeful, because that's what we're going to need, right? We're going to need to, you know, have all of those kind of diverse perspectives on solutions.
Yeah, and like you said earlier, it can be daunting to look at Greta Thunberg and think like, this is what I need to offer, but yeah, I can just find a way for people to share boxes when they're moving.
Totally.
And like, it's all, it's all helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's, that's one of the things that we found with Greta, is that you've got this global saviorism in these girls. And so people are just like, oh, she'll take care of it.
Yeah.
She's got it. And you see political cartoons where she's just trying to push the earth by herself. You know, it's like, yeah, everybody needs to be involved.
Huh?
I don't know.
It's going to take more than one girl with a megaphone.
That's right. That was a quote from one of the
movies that we saw related to it. Yeah.
So we have functivism and we have techno-eco-feminism.
Both. That's right.
Are there any other terms we should know? What else can you teach us?
Political icons. So the celebrity as an activist, which is different than
the protagonist.
Yes.
Iconic
what
protagonist.
You said.
Okay.
Yeah. What other terms?
The consumer one.
We learned a lot from Indigenous studies too.
Mm-hmm.
So we learned a lot about settler colonialism, which for me was like eye-opening in terms of just kind of understanding the dynamic and how to do that. And we really tried to say, well, she's middle-aged, but she identifies as middle-aged.
I do, because I am.
I'm not there yet.
That's all right. That's
all right. We were like, as white ladies.
Yeah, definitely.
As white ladies, we don't know.
We have blind spots.
We have lots to learn. And so we tried to draw from different scholars and different scholarship. That was really good. And there was another one that you know. Survivance.
Oh, survivance. That was, that's what you're thinking of the Indigenous chapter.
Yeah.
The idea, because stereotypically or culturally, the Native Americans and First Nations people are relegated to the past, right? We don't think of them as a present people.
Yeah.
And that's a problem that they face. And so when they're telling their stories, that's an actual act of survivance. It says like, here's our stories and hello, we're still here.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a white, what is it? And I'm forgetting his tribe right now, but he came up with this theorist. He's a theorist, a native theorist, about survivance. And so Gerald Visner is his name. White Ojibwe. Anyway, sorry, I'm gonna stop looking for the word. I'm trying to find it. But that was a really useful, like, so their acts of activism are also acts of survivance, and all against the backdrop of the femicide crisis facing Native communities of the missing and murdered Indigenous women, right? So they're trying to save the earth as they're trying to stay alive, right? Like, it's incredible. It's incredible what some of the constraints are on the different localities of the people and the cultures.
And then the last one I was thinking about was the radical empathy.
Oh, yeah.
Radical empathy. So that was kind of the conclusion of the book, was that we need to be more empathetic with kids and actually spread that message. Adults need to really spread that message. And, and that's radical because that's anti of what we're... Anti of what we're kind of taught in the values and things like that. And you already said Gen Z radical.
Yeah, Gen Z radical. We talked about global saviorism and spectacular girls. Techno equal.
It was feminism.
Yeah, we got all those big words in there.
Yeah, we just kept putting the words in. Right in the book.
That's right.
On Zoom.
Zooming in. The solutions are clear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's next for the project?
Well, we want to move from just the simple academic audience, because this is an academic press. But it is engaging. That was the reviews are saying. It's fun to read. It's accessible. So it's not clearly that. But we do want to take it to different audiences. I think both Heather and I are on the board of the Northwest Alliance for Media Literacy. So we do a lot with high school students and raising awareness with media literacy. And I think this would be kind of a neat thing to bring to Spokane and do some presentations and that could be kind of fun, and maybe even make it like hands-on. I think I could see how, like, okay, let's create a meme, or let's do it to some TikTok videos. So that's that. But it would be interesting to track them 5 or 10 years.
Yeah, because one project leads to another, and so we know they're growing into adults, right?
Yeah.
And they're doing it online, so if you're following them, you can see that, oh, this person's having some problems over here. And, oh, this person's now a model. You know, like, it's an interesting thing to track what they're doing. Because they're young and they're growing up.
Well, and, yeah, we're already seeing, like, the coverage of them change, or the way they're put, they're representing themselves is changing a little bit. Like, one of our girls is in college now, and she's kind of embroiled in a weird relational situation that's beyond her activism, which it was like she wasn't really posting about those kinds of things, but now it's like all about this relationship. And so
how do they remain activists, I guess,
or can they?
Yeah.
Or is there a new generation of girls that are going to emerge?
And remain young people too. I mean, to your point earlier, you know, like, that's, you know, as a college aged person, that's part of your life. And so how can you be both?
And can you, do more than your activism?
I wonder if the things that are fun for them just aren't fun for us. Like the app creation, the fun, like the coding.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
It's fundivism.
It's fundivism.
Yeah. Just in a sentence.
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, suing governments is fun.
I bet it is.
I bet so.
Like, to be able to be...
Yeah.
I mean, the drama. Yeah.
Yeah.
How will the... People that have power decide, what will they do?
Oh, be fun to pick
power?
Up.
Yeah. Oh, no way. Sorry.
Surprising. Well, we always end with fun rapid fire questions, but before we go there, is there anything else that we haven't talked about or that we ask about that you guys would like to share about?
Miss
the
anything?
Book or your experience writing it, or takeaways, anything?
No, I hope that, you know, the book inspires other people to go out and tell the stories of these girls, because this is just like one sliver, right? And so to us, it was just really important to tell their stories, and we just hope that other people will do that and continue to shine a light, I think.
That's it. Like, educate yourselves, and the solutions are out there. All we have to do is do them. Like, that seems...
We are the ones we've been waiting for.
Yeah.
Do you want to do rapid fire?
Let's do rapid fire. So we have some questions for you to end the podcast. They don't involve a lot of thought. And I'll just throw it out and you can both respond. What's your favorite book?
Besides the one you just wrote.
Yeah.
Oh, that's such a hard question. It requires a lot of thought. Little Prince.
Little Prince. Okay.
Little Prince.
Okay.
Oh. Oh man. I really like nonfiction, so I'm just like I'm a fiction hog. So I would say maybe can I change it into what is
change the question. Yeah. Are you gonna change the question? Yeah. Okay, good. That's so smart. I'll put you in with Pyongyang, and that was awesome.
Oh, that was pretty good too. Yeah, I also like comic novels. So okay. Oh, Persepolis. That's Persepolis. So that's the story. Do you know Persepolis story?
Is it a book with like a comic?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's a graphic novel.
That's
The Iranian Revolution, mm-hmm. and kind of how women and girls were dealing with that situation. But it's really beautiful. It's a movie really too.
So. Okay.
I wouldn't say it's my favorite, but it's worth checking out if you've never heard of it.
That's good.
It's a recommend.
Yeah.
This is an easy one because it requires no judgment. It's just, it's a fact.
Oh.
What is the last concert you attended?
Oh, I just saw the Black Crows in Azula.
Nice.
In August, yeah.
At Kettle House?
Yeah,
yes.
Such a good venue.
Yeah, it's such a good venue. Yeah. I saw something else. Oh, I saw the last show I saw at that venue was the Pixies with the Sleigh Bells. The Sleigh Bells are amazing.
Oh, nice.
I haven't heard of them.
I don't get out much. Last concert I attended was my son's band concert.
Amazing, yeah.
That counts.
That is a concert. Yeah.
But it was okay.
It was okay.
It's better than my daughter's recorded band. Hot Crossbones.
Hot Crossbones.
That's funny. This one is back into Subjective Town.
Yes.
What's your favorite restaurant?
It's okay. Do you choose the food genre?
Just favorite.
Oh.
Lately.
Ooh, lately.
I'm trying to make it easier.
Yeah. In the last 6 months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like Conchinito quite a bit.
Okay. Oh, nice. Yeah. Place is good.
Sushi Gal, so I like sushi.com. Mm.
Classic.
Choices.
Spoken on Gems.
How did you get to work today?
I drove my hybrid.
Mm. Me too.
Cool. No judgment.
Yeah, no, again.
Last one, probably the hardest. In 2030, Spokane will fill in the blank.
You're asking people who just wrote a book about the climate agency.
Yeah. Yeah.
Be greener.
Okay. Yeah.
A hopeful
answer. I love that.
Be better.
Yeah.
Greener and better. Good answers. There were no wrong answers.
The problem with the rapid fire is now I want to know your answer.
Yeah, it's your favorite book.
Oh, see, that's hard.
The tables
have turned. I'll get back to you.
There we go.
You should ask the question, what book is on your nightstand right now?
Ooh,
that's good.
Oh,
that's good.
Oh, I'm reading a book by, is it Terrence McKenna? It's about kind of, I don't know if I should record this. it's about, I'll just say medicinal plants and mushrooms and how those are found in the past and how movement away from using those in spiritual and medicinal ways, I think, have led to kind of more technocratic society we're into and more away from like a nature-centered society. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
On my nightstand is a book. It's Caroline, with you, I mostly read nonfiction, but I'm dipping my toes back into fiction. But it's about, it's called Ministry of the Future, and it's about, have you read this?
I've heard about it.
Okay. It's hard to read.
Yeah,
because it's taking place in like the near future. And it's if we created a ministry for the future that was kind of building policy and advocating for the unborn, essentially, in terms of the climate crisis. So, but it's taking place in the future. And so we are in the midst of so many of the natural disasters and conflict that we are moving towards right now. And it feels like very real and possible. So I think that's why it's a little bit of a challenging read, but it's still very interesting and good and hopeful at some point. So I'm not in very far, but yeah, that's what's on the nightstand. But all we can save is that was my answer to this question. I love, love, mm-hmm. love that book. It's so beautiful. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, this was excellent.
Yeah, thank
and
you.
And a really good way for us to get back
thank
into
you for
this.
Having us.
Yeah, it was really, really lovely. So-